You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined, as always, by Harrison Fagan. Harrison, you had a day off to talk with somebody who understands the technical aspects of the game like you. How did that feel?
It felt pretty good. It was, I'm going to lie and say that I missed you a lot, but I only missed you a little bit. But it was good talking to my internet dad, Pete, and you guys should go check out that episode if you want to get hyped about Lonzo Ball and about Kyle Kuzma and the rest of the Lakers young core and learn a little bit about journalism, too, at the end. Tonight I think we're ready to move on and talk about Jordan Clarkson.
Harrison, writing about LeVar Ball isn't journalism.
You clearly did not listen to the podcast, but that's fine. I don't expect you to at this point.
I'm sorry. I should be doing better. I'm trying to improve my ability in this podcasting industry to be better for the women, just like the guy that we're about to talk about. And here I am trashing a podcast I didn't even listen to.
Yeah, and especially, which is like sad because it's, again, your own podcast.
All right. Unlike me, you should follow the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Alexa, Spotify, Lakers Nation, and Lakers Outsiders. Today's show is going to be about Jordan Clarkson for the first two segments. We're going to talk about whether we think his play so far, which has been way better than many anticipated, is sustainable. And then in the B block, we're going to talk about what that means, if it is sustainable or if it isn't sustainable, what that means for the Lakers moving forward in terms of what they should do with their roster. And then on the C block, on the other half of the second break, we are going to answer one of your questions from iTunes, which, again, if you ever want anything to be guaranteed to be talked about on the podcast, give us a 5-star iTunes review, leave us your question, subtweet me, subtweet Harrison, doesn't matter. Make a giraffe pun. They're out there somewhere. But give us those 5-star reviews and send us those questions there, and I promise we are going to do whatever we possibly can to get to it, and that's going to be on the C block. So back to the topic at hand, though. Harrison, do you think Jordan Clarkson and what he has shown so far this year is what Jordan Clarkson is, or is this will he regress back to the mean?
So before I answer that question, I do just want to give a shout out to Jordan Clarkson, because this is a man who went into this game. He told Tanya Ganguly of the Los Angeles Times, like, basically that he wanted to play well to get girls. Like, just said that on the record, one of the best on the record, funniest on the record quotes I think I've ever seen an NBA player give. And then he went out the same night and scored 25 points and led the Lakers to a win. And, you know, I am disappointed that he didn't, like, do his post-game interview, like, with a girl on his arm, or, like, spend the whole game, like, winking at people in the crowd, or just yell, like, that one's for the gram after he hit a shot. Like, I am all for honesty and transparency in athletics, and I appreciate Jordan Clarkson for, you know, as potentially, like, maybe chauvinistic as some people might say that those comments were. I appreciate his honesty, and I think that it is hilarious that he admitted that he wants to play well to get girls. And because, I mean, in reality, isn't that why we're all doing this?
You know? Literally, that's the point of being a human being, is to reproduce.
Well, or yeah, you know, sure. That, now we're getting deep and existential, but I think, honestly, if you had asked me 5 games in, I would have said no. Lakers should sell high if anybody's willing to give anything up. And, that, you know, they still probably are going to and should try to sell off Clarkson if they're going to try and make these big free agency moves this summer. But I'm starting to believe that his play is a little bit more sustainable. He's averaging, or he's actually right now he's tied for his career high in points at 15.5. He's doing it on about two less shots a game. And so, you know, as you would guess, he's been more efficient, had highest field goal percentage of his career, highest 3-point percentage of his career, which is honestly the more encouraging development about his game. He's shooting 40% from three this year so far, and that's over a 14-game sample size while he's taking 3.2 per game. So that's like a decent sample size, and he's playing pretty well offensively. Like, the Lakers are still, I believe, a net negative while he is on the floor. Yes, because Brooke Lopez, I think, is their only, Brooke Lopez is their only consistent contributor to be a positive plus minus. But Jordan Clarkson, the Lakers are only getting outscored by like 3.2 points per 100 possessions while he's on the floor. And I mean, since he's moved into this primary backup point guard role for Lonzo Ball, I think, you know, he's played somewhat well. He doesn't always make every pass that I think everyone would like him to, and he doesn't always make the best decisions, but I think overall he's been solid, and he should get some credit for improving his game.
Agree with everything that you said there, and I would add to it that the efficiency aspect of it. Look, he's scoring right now, and this is the numbers at this point on ESPN are not updated to with the win against Phoenix. But heading into tonight, he was playing 21 minutes a game, which is lower than any point in his career, and still scoring the second most points per game at any point in his career. He scored 15.5 in his second year over 79 games. Last year he scored 14.7. This year he is at 14.8.
He's at 15.5 for 14 games
in. I'm saying, like, heading into the year, he's above 50%. Heading into tonight, he was above 50% from the field. And like you talked about, his three-point shooting is and he started out hot last year, if I remember correctly, as well.
But yeah, I think he had an ankle injury and then like after that he wasn't the same.
Right. And but all of that, like the scoring to me, Clarkson has always had the capability to be a scorer. He's a longer player. He's athletic enough, especially going to his strong hand, his right hand. He's athletic enough to get by just about anybody and get to the rim if he has a head of steam behind him. And that's something that I think everybody kind of anticipated. But what people didn't necessarily anticipate was the ability to run an offense. And you look at some of the – you talked about the plus minus or his net rating – when he's on the court being negative, some of the lineups that he's out there with, like I think tonight at one point he was out there with him, Vanderbilt, Corey Brewer, Julius Randle, and Andrew Bogut. Like in no situation, even against these terrible Phoenix Suns, is the point guard of that team going to be all that successful, because you have Corey Brewer, who is not very good at anything on an NBA level. Andrew Bogut at this point is a shell of a shell of a shell of himself. Julius Randle didn't play very well tonight, and I think that had to do with the fact that he was not playing with Andrew Bogut and had zero space to work with. And Vanderbilt is a D-League guy who is trying to etch out any minutes that he possibly can. So, like, you look at some of the lineups that Clarkson is playing in, and I'm going to overlook the net rating stuff and look bigger picture at his ability to run the team. And to me, and we're going to get to this here in a second, but to me, his ability to rerun that second team might make the Lakers rethink or think strongly about whether or not they want to get rid of Jordan Clarkson, because that was the big question mark, right? We know he is physically talented, but does he have the mental capacity to be a leader with the second unit? And he has. So here in a second, we're going to talk about whether or not his play so far should force the Lakers' hand in one way or another. So, Harrison, do you think the Lakers, now that we've seen Jordan Clarkson play this way for going on now 15 games, tonight or last night was their 14th game of the year, we have now seen over a full month of NBA play Jordan Clarkson play this way. Do you think, A, that's been enough to convince a team to maybe buy into Jordan Clarkson and the player that he's become? Or B, if that has been enough and the Lakers are getting calls about him, do you think they should follow through with this, or do you think they should stick it out with a combo guard who can run a second unit is pretty valuable.
I'm going to answer question B first because I'm a wild card like that. And I think the Lakers were getting calls about Jordan Clarkson, then I think that they would just take that call and take that deal for the most part, unless it was like, you know, they were getting long-term salary back in return, because mm-hmm. I think that, you know, while I'm sure that they value him and his contributions this year, because he has contributed, and I think that you made a very nuanced point about the lineups that he's playing in as well. And he's clearly improved as a player. And all of that said, I still think that the long-term salary there, especially with as well as Randall played and probably more of an appetite to his played and more of an appetite to keep him, because I think players like what he's done are more rare than players like Clarkson, then you kind of have to move Clarkson and you'd have to move Deng. And we already know that the Lakers are working on the latter. And I just think that despite how well Clarkson has played, the Lakers can find another Clarkson. Maybe they won't find that player with, you know, like a second round pick, because he's definitely exceeded his original draft stock, but they can find a combo guard at some point. Maybe not this year, midway through the year. That would probably hurt their team this year, but they just need to get out from under the salary if they're going to try and sign two max guys. And I think if a team offers them any type of asset for Clarkson, then they kind of have to pull the trigger. And so I guess that brings me into question A, where you were saying like, can the Lakers kind of afford to give him up, I believe, is like kind of the...
Yeah, that's the gist.
Yeah. And so, yes, I think it would definitely hurt the team this year. And the Lakers do have incentive to play well because of free agency. And so that's kind of the Sophie's choice, or like the weird dynamic here, is that they need to move him for free agency, but they also might need to keep him to impress free agents. But I just think free agents are smart enough to know that Jordan Clarkson is not the difference between them winning a title with the Lakers and not winning a title with the Lakers. Mm-hmm. And so,
especially if Jordan Clarkson is being moved to acquire said free agent.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think moving him to clear cap space would not be an unforgivable sin by any means. As far, it would hurt the team this year for sure, because that would mean more Ennis minutes, more Blue minutes, whatever. But like these guy, like they're still better off moving on from Clarkson, I think. Just objectively.
It's a matter of, can Ennis be 70% of Clarkson?
No, but they should still probably.
Well,
do it.
Right. So, but like, how low a percentage would you be willing to say Ennis can be? Like, I think Ennis could maybe be half of what Clarkson is. That'd be about where I would put my mathematical. Maybe Caruso.
Honestly, it's so critical for the Lakers to sign these free agents after everything that they've done to make that a possibility, that I think that it's honestly, Ennis does not, how well Ennis can play does not, or how well Caruso can play or whoever, does not factor into the equation for me at all. It could be 0% of Clarkson, and I still think that objectively that's a move you have to make.
I don't know if I agree with it.
If you can get an asset
to that scale, I don't know if I agree with it to that scale of.
So where's the percentage? Where does it stop for you?
I think Ennis will be about 50% of Clarkson. And that's why I'd like to see what Caruso offers. Or isn't Deron Williams still out there on the market somewhere?
And this launches our new recurring segment, is Deron Williams still alive?
But I guess my question is, look, if you don't, because I don't believe in Ennis. I've never liked Ennis particularly all that well. And when he started playing better last year, it was because everybody expected him to be the worst player that they've ever seen consistently. And then all of a sudden he wasn't, and people were like, oh, wow, look at Ennis go. But I never really bought into that stuff. I'd like to see Caruso get some more minutes after he...
Deron Williams has not signed with an NBA team.
Yeah, I didn't just think he had.
As a quick update. So like he was real bad last year.
He was. But so has been Ennis for his entire career. So if I'm the Lakers and you know, you can get an asset back, what kind of asset would you like? I'm hoping
LeBron.
it has to be either a high second round pick or a low first round pick. Because look, what I think it sends a pretty poor message to the rest of the Lakers. That, like, hey, Clarkson has finally done everything that they're asking of him and is finally running the second unit in ways that they were hoping that he'd be able to do over the course of his career. And after offering him that big contract that they did, or even, you know, middling contract that they did, he finally turns the corner and, oh, yeah, we'll just trade him away for a conditional second-round pick in 2020. Like, that just doesn't – if I'm a Laker, if I'm one of the guys on the team, I'm looking at that like, oh, cool. Like, that's my reward for playing well is I get shipped off to, I don't know, I'd say Milwaukee, but Milwaukee's in a better place. I'd say Brooklyn, because but the Lakers already did that. But
Brooklyn's going to build Lakers East. They're going to rehire the Lakers former coach too. Like, bring him back, bring him home.
But like you see the point that I'm making here, right? And the point can be extended.
Also, just to keep this recurring bit going, Deron Williams does not appear to have signed anywhere like outside of the United States either. No, so Deron Williams, as far as we know, still alive and available to presumably sign if the Lakers were to want to do that.
But the point I was making about Clarkson can be also extended to Randall. Like the day that those trade rumors came out and Woj was out there saying that Randall is highly unlikely to continue with the Lakers. So what you're saying, if you're the Lakers, to the rest of the Lakers players and to the fan base, is look, you're going to do what we've been hoping that you can do. Whether it's in Randall's case, give consistent effort on defense and be efficient in ways on offense that, frankly, a lot of people didn't believe he could be. And then if it's in Clarkson's case, be efficient on offense and also run the second unit in ways that a lot of people didn't think he was capable of. And in both of those cases, with both of these players, the question now becomes, all right, what can we get for him? Can we open up the space to get 3 years of LeBron? I can understand the frustration from fans if they do show frustration from that outcome.
Yeah, I understand that, and I can see why that maybe sends a bad message. But I think in the end, the Lakers have to remove themselves from all of that stuff. And I think if there's one criticism that you can make of this front office, it's that maybe they've been a little too focused on narrative. I think it's probably fair to say. And that's one of those things where, like, you have to determine behind the scenes how much that narrative really matters if you're going to, as far as affecting your free agency chances and affecting, and how much maybe like that affect that actually affects the mood of the fan base and how much that actually matters that like initially they'd be kind of discontented. And then it's like Golden State Warriors fans booed Joe Lacob when they traded Monte Ellis for Andrew Bogut. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like fans are going to get mad and they're going to boo sometimes. And sometimes it doesn't matter. And the fans still works Kobe. Out. Yeah.
That was a thing once upon a time.
Yeah. Fans booed D'Angelo Russell too. Oh, wait. That was probably a worse example.
That was not a great example. No.
Sorry.
All right. So we are going to. To tie a bow on this conversation about Jordan Clarkson. First and foremost, shouts to Clarkson for showing out the way he has and
doing it for the gram, man.
Yeah, do your thing, dude. I hope it's been effective, Jordan. And then also, we probably are both in agreement though that this might probably lead to his being moved, whether it's for a late first or an early second, and cap space, right?
Yeah, I think that's a fair move.
Yeah, so I think that I would agree that that's how that plays out, and it would be kind of a bummer. And if that is how that plays out, best of luck, dude.
Yeah, I mean, hey, like he's knockoff Monte Ellis in the streets and Wilt Chamberlain in the sheets.
We'll just go. We're just gonna go to break after that. All right, so I haven't quite got my breath.
Honestly, the first thing I thought was the break. So, like, dealer's choice where you put those ads in, or where we put those ads in, I guess. So I will go ahead and start us off on the next segment as you catch your wind. So we decided to go to the iTunes questions one day early. We're still going to have, if you quickly listen to this in the morning and you give us a question in the iTunes reviews, 5-star review, ask a question. We are doing a mailbag show tomorrow. We will answer your question. Ask it on iTunes in a 5-star review. This one comes to us from eGains12, who says the subject is Luke Walton, and he asks, why does Luke Walton refuse to put Randall and Lopez on the floor at the same time? And I think I'll go ahead and answer this first as you continue to catch your breath from just how hilarious I am. And I think it's honestly, like, we've talked about this a little bit before, but Randall's a center now. I think in today's day and age, Randall is a center, and we were just all wrong about – I remember you and I talked about this, and I think it was with Trevor Lane on an earlier podcast this season. We were talking about how the Lakers brought in Lopez, and it was seemingly to space the floor for Randall. And I was saying that we had never really heard the Lakers say that. And I think that 14 games into the season, we've seen kind of why they didn't see that. We didn't hear the Lakers say that. And that was always kind of an outside analysis type thing, because the Lakers see Randall as a center. I think it's pretty clear from Luke Walton's rotations. And I don't think that you can really argue with it. He's having inarguably the best season of his career. And I think if you move him to the four, he loses a lot of those advantages. And the type of defense that he's been able to play at the five, he's not able to do anymore, because he's going to be moved away from the rim. He's guarding smaller guys on the perimeter rather than just being able to use his bulk to kind of affect shots and take contact at the rim and still, like, not budge and get his arms and contest guys. And I just, like, he's never going to be Draymond Green, but he's kind of, he can be like the Lakers poor man's version of him a little bit.
So I agree with the point that you're making about how good he's been at the five. And if that is what the Lakers are thinking, then fine, cool. It's hard to argue with that, but it's hard for me to hear you say that that's what the Lakers actually think when last night the Lakers played him against or played him at the four with Andrew Bogut at the five. And to the points that you were making, he was not the same player. This was one of Randall's...
Luke Walton pre-heard this question and wanted to show us.
Yeah, well, I'll counter that in here a second. But, like,
he's different than Lopez.
Here's the thing. I agree that he has been really good at the five and better at the five than I would have predicted, even though I'm probably lower on Randall or was lower on Randall going into the season than most. But despite that, though, if you're going to play him with Andrew Bogut, then you have to at some point try him with Brook Lopez. Just try it. You're trying lineups like I talked about in the last segment, featuring Vanderbilt and Corey Brewer and Andrew Bogut. Like, if you're willing to be that drunk, just go. I mean, try all kinds of stuff. Like, try any kind of lineup that doesn't feature Corey Brewer and Andrew Bogut in the same lineup. But,
and, like, the thing is, to me, too, is that I don't understand is, like, Randall's already married. So why are the Lakers trying to put him in the best opportunity to play well when, you know, he doesn't have to do it because he loves women?
That's a very – I would
hope – Shouts to Jordan Clarkson. That is seriously – like, that's one of my favorite things I've seen about the Lakers in a long time. That was hilarious.
Next time you talk to Randall, I want that to be one of your questions. Like, all right, Julius.
Do you feel like you still need to play well given that you already are married? Yeah.
Are you concerned that you're lacking an edge because you are married with a kid?
And you don't have to go on Instagram at all hours of the night like Jordan Clarkson?
So to answer the question, I can't honestly answer the question. I don't know why he hasn't played him with Lopez at all. I can kind of understand why rotationally he has decided that Randall is a five in his rotations, with the minor exception being last night when he played with Andrew Bogut. And to be fair on that front, I think those were the first minutes really all season that he's played at the four with Andrew Bogut at the five, and it was a disaster. So I don't think they'll go back in that direction. And just like with the Celtics game, at the time I was concerned that, you know, I was a little bummed about the quotes that came out after it, and, you know, Luke Walton was basically saying that he brought Bogut and Brewer in first and not Randall because he wanted muscle and this and that and the other, and that it would have been nice if they had a practice. And Luke Walton was able to sleep on his decision and look at how poorly it looked on the court and then answer a question about it in practice. I'd have liked to seen that response. But we saw his response. Bogut didn't play the very next game. And I think what we're probably going to see is he's probably not going to play Andrew Bogut and Julius Randle together for a while. And unfortunately, that probably means that Julius Randle will probably continue to not play with Brook Lopez, because if I'm watching last night's game and the only thing I'm looking for is how did Randle look at the four, he didn't look very good. And I think Luke will continue to move away from that as an option.
Yeah, I think that's like, I think that's more than a fair answer. But I just, like, to me, he's still like, I mean, I guess, like, sure, you could try it. I just think that Randle loses so much by playing at the four that even with, as we've seen at this point, that even with Lopez out there for spacing, I still think it's like a net negative. And I kind of understand why they have gone this direction.
Yeah, and look, I think it makes a lot of sense offensively, but like you talked about defensively, Randle can do things as the five. He can switch a little bit more. He can stay closer to the rim, which makes him a better rebounder, which helps with the Lakers in transition. There are reasons out there. It's not inexplicable that the Lakers see Randle primarily as a five. He's been really freaking good there. It's just, if you're going to try all the weird things that Walton has tried so far this year, why not take that next step and try Randle and Lopez out there for just a couple minutes to see what it looks like?
Yeah. I mean, sure.
All right. So that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. We'll be back at it again tomorrow. I don't believe the Lakers play, right? This was the last game of their road trip.
I'm really glad that you always ask me these things, like... live on the air. No, they do not play tomorrow.
Yeah, I didn't think they did. They're back at it again.
Or tonight, I guess. Tonight they don't play.
Yeah, they yes. Their next game is against the Philadelphia 76ers. I believe Joel Embiid played last night, which means he's probably going to take the rest of the week off. So that gives the that gives the Lakers a little bit better of a chance on Wednesday. But fun. I wanted to make this point too, and we really should have led with this point about the Lakers beating the Suns the way they did. Winning games ugly is one of the things that the Lakers really haven't been able to do over the course of the last 5 years or so, right?
And they're fourth in defensive efficiency.
Yeah, if they won games over,
if
the
they were
last
just like not dog crap on offense, they'd be okay.
Yeah, but like over the last 4 or 5 years, if they won games, it's because they played well or the team they played against didn't play very well. Devin Booker went off against the Lakers. The Lakers didn't look particularly great really throughout the game and still pulled out a road victory at the end of a road trip in a hostile environment, semi-hostile. I didn't really see, there weren't too many fans in the stands out there. I don't
think Suns fans exist.
Yeah. but props to the Lakers for winning a game that really they have not won. It's been a while since we saw the Lakers win a game like they did last night. And like you talked about, them being fourth in defensive efficiency. Dude, like, what would you have wagered if I would have told you, hey, the Lakers will be top five in defensive efficiency 15 games into the season, what would you have bet against me?
My life, honestly.
Damn it, I got to go back and make that bet. Yeah, I didn't say that out loud, did I?
What?
No. All right, so that'll do it, though. Props to the Lakers. They win against the Phoenix Suns. That's a fun one. That's always fun to beat the Suns. They play like we talked about on Wednesday. So tomorrow's show will be a mailbag question day. Give us those 5-star reviews. Send us in those questions about anything. I'll answer just about anything on the podcast. Harrison is a little bit more conservative with these things, but I'll answer just about anything. Until then, make sure you're following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, and Lakers Outsiders. I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Harrison Fagan. We'll talk to you tomorrow.